month, I was informed that it would be a good idea to do a program on women, since it's Women's Month. Since it's pretty much always Women's Month for me, I thought that was a great idea. I wanted to do something I was passionate about. I'm passionate about a lot of things, of course, as are we all. I went through a list: education, civil rights, music, literature, history, national parks, politics, good German beer, and cowboy boots. How could I put all of those together for a show? I decided to concentrate on one of my favorite topics, female songwriters. I recently had the pleasure of performing in the showcase for the little record label I'm signed with, Lost Cowgirl Records, at this year's International Folk Alliance Conference held at the Weston Crown Center. I spent 4 nights watching incredible female singer-songwriters get up and show their stuff. What impressed me most was the diversity of talent. Female singer-songwriter isn't a genre anymore. All these women were doing their own thing. Not female music, but just music. When we look at female composers or poets throughout the years, of course, we can't expect women to have figured into the picture to the extent which their male counterparts have. Pre-liberation female creators are few and far between. We've got some Brontes, Virginia Woolf, Jane Austen, Mary Shelley, Clara Schumann, Ruth Crawford Seeger. Not really that many to choose from. But singer-songwriters from the 1950s on up to the present, we're talking post-revolution, supposedly. How many female songwriting icons were there during this time period, and how popular were they? I wanted to do some data collection. It was more than a little discouraging. I first went to the Rolling Stones' top 100 songwriters list. I figured some people there would know what they were talking about. And it was a good list. Lots of good guys I certainly would have put on my own list. Lennon and McCartney, Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, Paul Simon, Smokey Robinson, Lou Reed, etc. Sure, they all belonged. Unfortunately, only 2 women were on the top 10 list. Quite predictably, Joni Mitchell and Carole King. On the list of the full 100, a little under 20% were women. On the top 50, only 10%. As I did more investigating, well, that was as good as it would get. Other lists of the top singer-songwriters in history would typically put Joni Mitchell in the top 10 and round out their 100 list with another 9 women, 10%. When the polls were public opinion, same results. Joni Mitchell in the top 10, Carole King or Dolly Parton in the top 20. Even when there were polls taken in the last couple of years and included current musicians such as Adele or Lady Gaga or Beyonce, the number was a dependable 10%. How could that be? From 1960 to the present, the percentage of females in the world has varied about 0.5%, always hovering around or slightly under 50%. Where was our voice? I then looked at lists of poets, ranking the best poets of all time. It got worse. Emily Dickinson is evidently the Joni Mitchell of poetry, the only one who could crack the top 10, according to the New York Times list. As far as the top 100 poets in history, 5% were women. Sylvia Plath, Elizabeth Barrett Browning, it looked like about one woman a century could make the list. When I looked at public opinion polls, same kind of lists, same percentages. I'm not here to talk about how unfair that is. The people making the list had good reasons for placing who they did on the list. I'm not going to say that Stevie Nicks should replace Bob Dylan on a list like that, or that Maya Angelou should necessarily replace Walt Whitman or Robert Frost. However, I do wonder how my view of the world would be different if I had had a few more women to read and listen to as I was growing up, and how men's view of the world might be different as well. The world through Bruce Springsteen's eyes or Robert Johnson's eyes is a little different than the world through Carole King's eyes or Patti Smith's eyes or Loretta Lynn's eyes. We need that expression to give voice to our own Weltanschauung. When I look at my students or at my own son and daughter, I want their list to hover more around 50% female. I want that female voice to be a major part of their literary and musical window on the world. When I see how many talented women are out there, I don't want to dedicate 1 month to them. I want the full 50% to be theirs, not in the interest of fairness, but because that's how the numbers shake out. The last night that I was at the Folk Alliance Conference, we had a ladies' jam in the Lost Cowgirl Room. There were some amazing female musicians there, and it was fabulous to watch an all-female jam with women really showing off their stuff. I'd never experienced that before. too often in my life, it has been women standing around in awe of the men, with the women participating barely on the edges, if at all. But the image that sticks in my mind of that night were all the people watching the jam, mainly male, singing along, taking videos, and most importantly, cheering us on. That's a percentage that gives me hope. So that's tonight's program, touching on most of my passions. German beer and cowboy boots and national parks will have to wait for another show. We have some talented, interesting women joining us tonight. Erin O'Dowd, Ellie Grace, Mary Elaine Mahon, and Tara Duckworth, and we'll talk about a special night happening once a month in St. Joseph, Missouri. Welcome to tonight's program. This is Julie Bennett-Hume, co-host and producer of River City Chautauqua. Mary Elaine Mahon was born in Gainesville, Florida. Elaine's sensibilities as a songwriter developed from a childhood spent roaming the woods and the beaches of North Florida. But it was her work in extragalactic astronomy, which earned Mahon a PhD, that broadened her perspective and strengthened her appreciation for nature. Elaine left her career in order to remain near family and to begin to explore her creativity through music. She now has 3 well-received albums to her credit. Her most recent album is her Reach for the Stars, which she released last year. She resides in her hometown of Gainesville with her husband of more than 30 years, with whom she enjoys tennis, traveling, hiking, birdwatching, canoeing, and camping. We're pleased to have her as a guest today to talk about her songwriting craft.
Recently, I attended the Will McLean Folk Festival in North Florida, where Florida songwriters gather to share their songs and stories on stages and around campfires. It is quite a marvel to witness the cornucopia of creativity in this intimate festival in the forest and to enjoy the magic that ensues with the sharing of song. Festivals like this provide a wonderful opportunity to listen to a wide variety of songs and to hear the stories behind them. While I was there, I also had a chance to learn a little bit more about how some of my favorite songwriters approach their craft. The reason their songs stand out to me, beyond the fact that they are lyrically well-crafted with memorable melodies, is that the artistic voice of these artists is unapologetically authentic. Their unique perspectives on life, love, and the human condition are immediately recognizable, and their songs hit the mark emotionally. Whether funny, dark, rocking, or introspective, these songs resonate in the heart and mind. They ring as true, and they have profound depth once you scratch below the surface. That is, they bear repeated listening. These are the kinds of songs that revisit you when you wake up in the morning. You might start singing them in the shower, or find yourself humming them while going about your daily activities. As a form of communication, song is extremely powerful, because it couples music to language. Music can activate different neural pathways than language alone, and perhaps this is why singing has been found to be helpful for some stroke patients in regaining language ability. Songwriters take advantage of the brain's great repository of sensory and emotional experience when they put words to music. A good song can literally light up the brain of the listener. As conscious beings, we experience the external world through our senses. Our brains are constantly trying to make sense of the noise from our senses. We then create an internal landscape of emotions such as pleasure, pain, contentment, fear, or excitement that become associated with our sensory experience. So, in my everyday life, I try to pay attention to the imagery that is presented through my senses and take note of my emotional connection to it. By putting myself out there and paying attention, I really experience the world while making way for all sorts of associations to form in my mind. When I walk through the woods or on the prairie or the beach, I take note of any colors, shapes, textures, sounds, smells, and tastes that evoke memories or emotions. Later, I draw on these images when I'm writing lyrics because they help me fully convey the emotional content of the song. When I'm successful at this, the experience of listening to the song becomes almost like that of watching a short film. Songwriters need inspiration, and I've found the natural world to be a great source of it. But inspiration can really be found anywhere if we pay attention. Another great source of inspiration can be found in dreams. While we're dreaming, the subconscious mind is busy sorting, correlating, and mapping physical and emotional memories. As a result, dreams can often provide evocative and insightful imagery. In fact, it can sometimes take me up to an hour to document the imagery provided by one very short dream. Not only do songwriters need to be excellent observers, they also need to be active participants in life in order to gain insights into the human condition. When a songwriter is successful at expressing their personal insights in song, the song rings as true and the artist's voice comes across as authentic. This doesn't mean that the song has to be autobiographical, only that the lyrics of the song provide a fresh perspective. Song is a beautiful way to communicate our shared humanity. And as a songwriter, my goal is to distill my own life experience, gain insight into the human condition, and then give voice to that which speaks directly to the heart and mind of the listener. In my body of work, I attempt to impart a sense of awe and wonder while offering both hope and empowerment. My favorite approach to songwriting is probably the least expedient, but it is most rewarding to me in terms of process. It literally starts with playing around on an instrument or with a pad and pen. And when I come across a rhythm, a lyrical phrase, or a melody line that resonates, I work it over and over again, like a Zen koan. As an astronomer, I call this the dust speck that absorbs angular momentum, because lyrical and melodic ideas can now begin to coalesce around it. For now, I'll call it a song seed. Once I have a song seed, I then face the big unknown. What is this song about? What is the underlying insight? How am I going to proceed? It can be a bit daunting at times, but I've learned to trust that my subconscious mind will get busy making the necessary connections and associations, so I rarely start at the beginning of a song and proceed to the end. Instead, the evolving melody or lyric line provide their own constraints. As the song seed grows, I sometimes realize that I need to give it a rest. In order to move the song forward, I need to experience new things in life so that the necessary associations can form. I have many of these seeds lying about, and I put them down and pick them up periodically to see where I stand with them. Once a song seed starts experiencing significant growth, pursuing the song then becomes a big adventure of discovery, a giving of myself over to the unknown. I feel a sense of purpose and a sense of connection to something greater. Don't take this to mean that I wander about waiting for a song to happen. My intent is set each day. I do the conscious work to expand my skill set, to hone my existing skills, to play with the tools in my toolbox, and I play freely. Tools for me are imagery notes, lyrical ideas, song snippets, research notes, melodic and rhythmic ideas. The operative word here is play. Playtime is a garden where inspiration blooms. Every day, aside from rehearsal, practice, or research, I literally go into play mode, just messing around on the instrument or with pen and paper. In fact, writing a song is much like playing in a sandbox. The sandbox has a boundary, and you are working with a limited number of tools. Put imagination at the helm, and you're a child again, building castles in the sand. I like to think of mind as a very dense network of highways and byways formed over time by our experience as sensory beings. Music and art are powerful in that they allow us to discover hidden and forgotten pathways. They let us form new connections and associations. The way that the subconscious mind accesses the many highways and byways that connect various regions of thought can seem magical at times. When a new connection for a melody or a lyric lights up, I call that inspiration. Inspiration not only provides seeds for songs, but it also comes into play when working within the constraints of a given form. Whether you call it crafting or sculpting, inspiration allows us to take things to the next level, to create something new and different. I have no formulaic approach to songwriting, just a powerful drive to create, a joy in the process, and a sense of awe and wonder at the interplay between my conscious and unconscious mind and bringing a song into the world. I might shower in the morning and hear in the background noise a new melody or chorus. It's the nature of the mind to find coherence in the background noise, and this is because we're bombarded with sensory inputs. The natural process of filtering out the noise to find the signal works in songwriting as it does in our everyday life. Was the pattern actually there, or did our brain impose it? It doesn't matter. Once the pattern is identified by the brain, we begin to cross-correlate it with other patterns along our brain's emotional and sensory highways. Once a seed of inspiration takes root, it becomes internalized, and the writing of the song becomes both conscious and unconscious. The song is there with the instrument or pen in hand, or when I'm walking down the street, or while grocery shopping. The rhythm presents itself in my movements. The song is working its way to the surface. For a given song, this process may take hours, days, or years, but then, all of a sudden, as if someone has plugged in a long string of lights, the pieces start to fall together. The form of the song becomes codified. The lyrics spill out. The melody develops. There may be a few stumbling blocks or areas to rework, but the die is now cast and the race is on. There's a quickening, a delight in the desire to birth this song, to bring it where it wants to be. And as if possessed, I work until the song has found its voice. And then I cry. This outflowing of creative energy results in a surge of endorphins, and the experience is so powerful, it often fosters the birth of another song in its wake. Once a song is born, what remains is the iterative process of refinement, editing, and performance testing. All that's left to do now is to sit down with intent and finish the job, clean it up, and then go back to playing. I sit beside the rabbit hole, and I fear what may come out. The time has come, I tell myself, to tear this old house down. It lingers like an eye. Down behind the dunes, as if it's architect danced to some Mad Hatter's tune. The kitchen's dark, I can't abide those claustrophobic rooms. It makes me want to run outside, jump in that ocean blue. The rabbit waits and watches while quietly I sit. Decides it's safe to want. Fear, I'll dry my tears, wait till my vision clears. In silence, sit together, me and my golden muse. He says, it's time to seize the day. Revelation when the missing link is found.
has come, and tell myself to tear this old house down, to tear it down. I sit beside the rabbit hole, and I fear what may come out. The time has come, I steal myself and tear this old house down.
Aaron O'Dowd is a singer-songwriter originally from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and is now based in Nashville. The youngest daughter of a preacher, O'Dowd grew up singing in church and school talent shows and wrote her first song on the family piano at age 2. An avid writer from a young age, she spent hours in the family treehouse dreaming up poems and short stories. She taught herself guitar at age 15 and decided she would become a singer-songwriter. She still hasn't changed her mind. Aaron O'Dowd's debut album, Old Town, will release May 4th on Horton Records. You can see Aaron here in Kansas City on April 15th at the Westport Saloon.
Hi, my name is Aaron O'Dowd. Thank you so much, Julie, for having me on River City Chautauqua. Really happy to be here. I am a cosmic Americana singer-songwriter, originally from Tulsa. I moved out to Nashville in September. I actually came out for the first time and to visit my parents who had recently moved out here and to also go to Americana Fest. And I met a lot of amazing people, fell in love with the city, and I never left. So that's a fun story. I was born in Mississippi, grew up in Florida until I was 11. My dad was a preacher. He's still preaching actually out here in his retirement. And I moved to Oklahoma when I was 11, stayed there for 18 years, and just recently moved out to Nashville. So that's basically the story of my life. Just kidding, there's a lot more to it than that. But I actually recorded this, and the whole thing got deleted. It was terrible. I have not used GarageBand in a while. I'm using that to record this. And I'll just tie that into my little speech for this episode, which is about, you know, being a woman in the music industry and never giving up. I think that's really important no matter what your gender is. But I do totally have to agree with the statement that women have to work twice as hard in the music industry. It is a male-dominated industry. A lot of people would tell you that in any industry that's the case. You know, there's a huge pay gap. Shout out to Margot Price. Love that song. Huge pay gap for women and also for minorities. So I'll talk about that in the music industry because that's really my field of expertise. But I've definitely had to, you know, work real hard to stand out and, you know, and be noticed as a woman in the industry. There's a lot of great men in the industry as well. Don Simon in Kansas City, Lost Cowgirl Records is amazing. Brian Horton, Horton Records, that's my label. They're out of Tulsa. I've been working with them for a long time and made tons of great opportunities for me. But in the industry as a whole, you know, there's a lot of talented men, and it just seems to be that you have to be, you know, twice as good as some of those men to get the same sort of slots. And you know, I've definitely played gigs where I was paid less than men. Didn't typically know about it ahead of time. But yeah, in a lot of those cases, I was able to, you know, speak up and get a raise, but not always. You know, it really just depends on the booker. And but yeah, so, you know, my advice to women on that would be, you know, never give up and just, you know, realize that, you know, you might be coming from a place of, you know, disadvantage, but I mean, I think you can use that to your advantage and not by, you know, stepping on other women to get up to the top, but by, you know, encouraging each other and really supporting each other and, you know, working your way to the top together. You know, we all lift each other up, and the better community that we create, for ourselves, like we can all share that and reap the benefits. I really, really believe that. And And I'm really, you know, excited to be a woman in the Americana industry. I think it's a great growing industry. So I'll tell you a little bit about my music. I'm really, really heavily influenced by roots music. I really love, you know, Levon Helm, Odetta, the Carter Family, Lead Belly, stuff like that. That really influenced my writing style. I would say I'm really influenced by that and a good mix of that and, you know, Bob Dylan, who was influenced by that, him and Joan Baez, I discovered when I was in college. I was in school for art. Drawing was my thing, and I dropped out after kind of just playing guitar instead of doing all my work. I still love making artwork to this day, but something about the music and that expression just became a focal point for me. I was really inspired by, you know, the 60s activism, and it just taught me that there's a voice that I have that's unique, and with music, I can really, really share that with the world, and, you know, I really want to help make this world a better place, and that's a big, big deal for me, whether it's a love song that I'm writing, you know, just a feel-good song, or a song that has a very, you know, strong, bold statement. So I will share with you more about my songwriting process, too, in a very special song that we will be playing for you at the end of this little chat, little fireside chat we're having. So another thing that I'm supposed to tell you about are my plans. So I'm releasing my debut album. It will be out May 4th on Horton Records. It'll be out internationally. I'll be touring in support of that starting April 1st. I'll be in Kansas City playing at the Westport Saloon April 15th at 9 p.m., I'll be opening for 20,000 Strong Men, a great local band, awesome name. And I've got a Lawrence show coming up on either the 16th or the 18th, still finalizing that, but I'll be around in the area. And that's my plan for 2018 is touring. I'm playing Key West Songwriters Festival in May. I'm going to Southeast Regional Folk Alliance in May as well. Kerrville, end of May, June. I'll be back to Oklahoma for a second run, for a short little run, and then out to, I guess I'll just say the Southwest, California, Colorado, and then back to Woody Fest. I have had a huge amount of fun already this year playing music, and I just can't wait to do more. It's called Trick Pony. This one's going to be the first single off the record. It is a honky-tonk tune. It's real sassy, real fun. a little bit of, you know, behind the song. So this one was inspired by an old boyfriend of mine. We had a long on-and-off-again relationship and lots of inspiration to draw from there. I was just driving in the car one day, and I had this thing in my head like, man, you're just a rolling trick pony. I think I had heard some old cowboy say that at the bar, no joke, or... You know, I thought, you know, that's a great expression, and I just started coming up with puns and little rhymes, and it kind of just wrote itself. It was really one of those songs that wrote itself really easily and was just a ton of fun to write. Please look me up online. That's Erin O'Dowd. I'm from Nashville. My debut album, Old Town, will be out May 4th on Horton Records, and you can find me online, erinodowd.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Bands in Town, and more. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.
Yeah.
Ellie Grace was born into a deep musical tradition and began her lifelong love affair with dance at the ripe old age of 5 when she slipped on her first pair of tiny clogging shoes. She spent her life performing professionally as a singer, multi-instrumentalist, songwriter, and dancer who specializes in roots-based Americana and percussive dance. She first took to the stage as a young member of her family band and now tours internationally as a solo artist and a member of several beloved bands, Leland Ellie Grace, Claflin and Grace, and Blue Eyed Girl. She recently appeared as a featured guest with Peter and Paul of Peter, Paul and Mary at the Rubicon Theater in California and performed with Janice Ian at the Swannanoa Gathering in North Carolina. Ellie is a passionate and devoted teacher, having taught at camps, schools, colleges, and festivals across the country for well over 20 years. In addition to her time on faculty at Smith College, Mount Holyoke College, and University of North Carolina, Asheville, Ellie has directed schools of folk music and dance in Missouri and North Carolina. In the culmination, a lifetime of performing and teaching, Ellie received her Master of Fine Arts in Dance Performance and Choreography from Smith College in May of 2015.
Hi, this is Ellie Grace. I'm so happy to be here visiting with you all. And I'm just going to tell you a little about my story, where I come from. I'm based here in Kansas City now, but I have been making music in lots of different places prior to arriving here. I was actually born and bred, is that an awkward thing to say? But I was first brought into the world here in Missouri, in Columbia, Missouri. My family is based there, and I grew up in a rather unique way in that I was part of a professional family band. So music has been part of my life since before I was born. My mom was actually learning to play the accordion when she was pregnant with me, which, you know, some might say has an impact on one's personality, but I do not know what people might be referring to with that. But my parents, when I was first born, they just did music as their hobby, as a way to be part of their community and connect with friends. But as I got a little older, they started doing music as their profession. And my sister and I were 20 months apart, and we were always along for the ride. And they eventually figured out that we knew all of their songs, and we had been picking up instruments that were lying about the house since we were very young, and just we thought music was something everyone did. You ate dinner and you played music. You got up in the morning, you ate breakfast, and then you played some music. So that has continued throughout our life, being kind of at the heart of what I do and what my sister now does, in that we believe music is a birthright for everyone. We just happen to be born around it, but we both work to bring music into the world, to people, bring people together through music. But we grew up, like I said, with music around all the time, and then eventually on the road playing music. So we toured all over North America in our motor home, playing at folk festivals and community events and concerts, and in fact encountered Julie at some of those early days of music. And we went on doing that, recording multiple recordings until my sister and I went to college. And then once we did that, we decided it was time for our parents to fly the nest and go on about their way. They were ready to make music without us. And my sister and I continued as a duo in some of the same circuit, doing some of the same music. But my sister and I had also both, her name is Leela. I won't just continue referring to my sister without giving a name. We had both started writing music, which is something our parents had never done when we were, well, our first song, I believe, was written sitting at the piano when we were maybe 4 and 6, and we had picked up pretty clearly that songs were usually about heartbreak. We weren't exactly sure what that meant, but we sat at the piano, and I think my sister was probably the scribe because, you know, I was four. Maybe I didn't know how to write yet. But we wrote out the lyrics, and it was all about how our true love was gone, and we were really mourning this loss of our true love. So from that brilliant early start in our songwriting career, we went on to continue writing music, and we recorded some with the family band and then continued on as a duo. And a lot of it is music inspired by coming out of traditional music. Our family played contemporary folk music, but also traditional Appalachian and Ozark music. That's still part of what I do and what I do as a duo with my sister. We are well past college now, but still making music together. She lives in Portland, Oregon. I'm based here in Kansas City. We still meet multiple times a year to tour and make music and have continued that tradition of music in our family, even as we branch out into other projects. And after a while after college, I actually moved to Asheville, North Carolina, and lived there for 8 years. And there I really dove into exploring more of the traditional Appalachian music. And I play mandolin, guitar, fiddle, ukulele, all the things with strings. And I had a couple of bands based in Asheville, even as I continued to tour with my sister from Asheville. I had an old-time trio called Blue-Eyed Girl, all miraculously women my age who had grown up with parents who played traditional music, who were also kind of part of the back to the land hippie movement that my parents were part of. And when we found each other, we were like, I thought I was the only one. I didn't drink soda and I played old time music. Those weren't the only defining characteristics, but they were definitely up there. So that was a pretty amazing experience, finding other people who had a similar musical background. And it was also in Asheville that I met my now songwriting partner, Brian Claflin, and we started what has become a very fruitful writing partnership. At the time, not knowing, because you just never know what it's going to be like to write with someone. Writing in collaboration is a really different experience from writing alone, and I had primarily written alone my entire songwriting career, but something clicked with him and we have written many songs together. I think it's been about 6 years that we've been writing together, and we just released our first duo CD last year with 10 of, no, now I don't even know my own CD. Maybe it's 11, 10 or 11 songs. They're really great. They're very memorable. I just can't remember how many. And that CD is called Walk It With You. But that was a pretty defining experience in my writing, is feeling what it's like to have someone else's influence on your song and to put your idea out there, plant it like a seed in someone else and see what grows from it, and then have them plant their ideas in you and see what grows. So that was pretty remarkable. My sister and I have only successfully written one song together. I think it's because we have a little too much fun together, end up writing songs that we think are hilarious, but potentially other people might not find quite so hilarious. But I'm sure there's a future where we're going to be very serious adults and write amazing songs together. I'll let you know when that happens. But after I had started my collaboration with Brian Claflin, I ended up moving to Northampton, Massachusetts, and again, continuing to make music from Northampton, Massachusetts, with my sister, with my band in Asheville, with now my songwriting partner, and occasionally with other bands that I toured with briefly, and other dance companies. And part of this that started when I was very young is that I am a clogger in addition to all these musical things. So I do Appalachian clogging and I started that when I was 5 years old. And what ultimately took me from Asheville, North Carolina to Northampton, Massachusetts is that I was accepted into a Master of Fine Arts program at Smith College in dance. And I had this amazing experience working with combining music and traditional dance with the academic world and concert dance and just making this incredible piece called Blue Ridge to the Bronx. That was my MFA thesis, exploring the connection between Appalachian dance and music and hip-hop dance and music. So that was another chapter, and music continued to flow through all of this, writing songs, and some of the songs I was writing were in my thesis. And then after graduating, I taught at Smith College and Mount Holyoke College, and then ultimately fell in love and landed in Kansas City because of love. I'm sure that's why many people land many places, but have just been thrilled to be part of the community here in Kansas City. And I have been teaching a lot here in Kansas City. I teach community singing classes and harmony singing classes, and am just looking forward to finding more ways to collaborate with people. And I have been writing a lot in the last 2 years, more in the realm of activism and social justice, sort of exploring that connection between arts and activism. And I'm excited to see where that goes. And in fact, this will be announced soon, but I got a grant from Arts KC to begin the process of recording a solo CD here in Kansas City, with a lot of the focus being on social justice music and music that I've written in the last 5 years or so. So that is a synopsis of the life of Ellie Grace as seen through her musical adventures. And here I am in Kansas City and thrilled to be talking to all of you.
This is Scott Easterday for River City Chautauqua. Here's I'm Gonna Walk It With You by Ellie Grace and Brian Claflin from the album Walk It With You, released in August of 2017. This song has been sung by thousands of people at protests, marches, schools, and events across the world after going viral. 10,000 people sang it at the Utah State House as part of the Women's March, and Ellie was invited to perform it in May of 2017 with Peter and Paul of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Well, it looks like it might be a hard road, but I'm gonna walk it with you. And I know you might have a heavy load, but I can carry some too. I will lift you up when they push you down. I will raise my voice and stand my ground. Well, it looks like it might be a hard road, but I'm gonna walk it with you.
And it looks like it might be a long night, but I ain't going nowhere. And I know it's gonna be a hard fight, but I will stay right here. I will shine a light in the darkest hour. I will face the man in the tallest tower. Well, it looks like it might be a long night, but I ain't going nowhere. I will work.
I will fight.
I will strive in the name of love.
I will speak.
I will shout.
I will sing it to the skies above. Well, it looks like it might be a perilous climb, but I will follow your lead. And I know it might be a long time until the last one of us is free. But I will hold on tight, stay by your side. I will be with you for this whole damn ride. Well, it looks like it might be a perilous climb, but I will follow your lead.
Well, it looks like it might be a hard road, but I'm gonna walk it with you.
And I know you might have a heavy load, but I can carry some too. I will lift you up when they push you down. I will raise my voice and stand my ground. Well, it looks like it might be a hard road, but I'm gonna walk it with you.
That's right.
I'm gonna walk it with you. I'm gonna walk it with you. I will walk, I will climb, shine my light the whole night through. Because it looks like it might be a hard road, but I'm gonna walk it with you.
This is Scott Easterday. Julie and I took a short trip up to St. Joseph, Missouri to a club called Unplugged. We talked to Tara Duckworth about MAM magazine. You can check that out on Facebook at facebook.com/MAAMZINE. Then we stuck around to hear a group called House Blend that were the pioneers of the acoustic night at Unplugged. Big thanks to sound man Jason Johnson.
My name is Tara Duckworth. I am the editor and publisher of MAM Zine. MAM is an independent feminist art zine published and distributed in St. Joseph, Missouri. MAM was started a little over a year ago when I didn't see a space for women in my community to share their creativity separate from the male gaze. I didn't see a space dedicated to women's poetry, photography, and stories, so I created one. As Kathleen Hanna said, I wanted to make something that I wanted to hear, that I wasn't hearing. Inspired by the zines of the Riot Girl movement of the Pacific Northwest in the 1990s, I decided to jump in and give it a try. With no formal background in journalism or graphic design, the DIY aesthetic and ethos were and continue to be incredibly empowering in the development of MAM. In that spirit, I edit and design each issue, and they are printed in small batches with love. MAM has created 4 issues to date, and we hope to have our family-themed issue ready for print in the spring. We only accept submissions from individuals who identify as women, with the understanding that the creation of true equality does not mean every person deserves equal access to every space. It means hearing the specific needs of specific groups and taking those into account when holding space. It was therefore crucial to create a space that focused on women, women's voices, stories, and talents. In this space, marginalized, often underrepresented voices get a chance to speak freely. As feminism has traditionally excluded many marginalized people, at MAM, we acknowledge the importance of oppressed voices and approach our content from an understanding of intersectionality. My experience as a white woman will inform my experiences with oppression and discrimination. Because I am white, there are certain privileges I will experience simply because of my skin color. Because I am a woman, there are certain discriminations I will face because of my gender identity. All women have a race, class, religion, age, sexual orientation, and ethnicity, and their experiences as women will be affected by where the different aspects of their identity intersect. With MAM, we strive to tell more than just the straight, white, young, cisgender narrative of feminism. So our monthly Women Positive open mic nights were born out of a desire to build face-to-face relationships and to carve out a little space where women could express themselves without the intimidation or judgment that can sometimes exist with a traditional open mic. MAM Presents Women, which is what we call our open mic nights, are held the second Thursdays of each month at Unplugged. These evenings are designed to hold space for women to take the stage in a relaxed, supportive environment. We have a featured female artist each month. The featured artist performs at the beginning of the evening, and then the stage is opened up for any woman who would like to share or perform. In these kinds of creative, expressive, women-positive spaces, I feel comfortable and confident, and I hope other women do as well. At our open mic nights, we have had women share personal accounts of rape and domestic violence. We have also had women sing their favorite Sia songs a cappella. It's pretty magical.
Sometimes
times feels like rain. Farmer in the field says, I think this crop just might pay. If the good Lord's willing and the creek don't rise. Sometimes he feels like the tear in his faded jeans. And then sometimes feels like rain. Old man in an alley with his late model shopping cart. It's loaded with extras like booze, papers, and cans. Well, sometimes he feels like the holes in his old shoes. And then sometimes feels like rain. Woman standing in the unemployment line says to the man, for every dollar you make, I earn a dime. Sometimes she feels every line in her face. And then sometimes feels like rain. Yeah, everybody feel it. Sing it. I dropped my pick. And here's where it's getting serious. Sometimes I feel like a pair of worn out old shoes. Sometimes I feel like torn, faded blue jeans. Sometimes I feel every line in my face. And then sometimes it just damn near feels like rain. Just feels like rain. Oh Lord, he let it rain. Oh yeah.
Thank you, guys.
I'd like to thank Aaron O'Dowd, Ellie Grace, Mary Lane Mahon, Tara Duckworth, and Jason Johnson of Unplugged in St. Joseph, Missouri, for their help with tonight's program. This has been Julie Bennett-Hume and Scott Easterday with River City Chautauqua. Thank you for listening.